And welcome into the weekend edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. Glad to have you along. Couple of little hitters before we get to what our main topic of this show is. And the main topic is the Bucks and why I don't think it's time to panic yet, but there are some disturbing trends that have to be corrected. Now, there's a couple of breaking news stories that happen in the world of sports that affect our teams. One from baseball and one from football. We'll start with football as Mike Pettine, to no one's surprise, not retained for the 2021 season by Packers head coach Matt LaFleur. I did see this coming, even though I think that Mike Pettine generally is a pretty good coach. But about halfway through the season, who wasn't playing well? Well, Preston Smith wasn't playing well because Pettine at times had him drop into coverage. Kenny Clark, who had just signed this huge contract in the offseason, wasn't playing well. And I think some of that does have to come down to coaching. And on defense, you have to be aggressive. On defense, you do have to go after fumbles and interceptions and playing that type of football if you're going to have a deep playoff run. The Packers were the best team in the NFC this year. And you can say, well, they deserved a chance to go to the Super Bowl. Well, if it weren't for bad coaching decisions, they probably would be preparing for the Super Bowl a week from Sunday in Tampa, Florida. What happened at the end of the first half was inexcusable, and that is something that Mike Pettine is going to have to wear. And every single time that Mike Pettine interviews for defensive coordinator position the rest of his career, he'll probably, and rightfully so, be asked about why did you have Kevin King have single coverage on Scotty Miller with 8 seconds left to play in the first half of the NFC Championship game when you knew Tom Brady only had one shot at scoring and it was going to be over the top. It was going to be a shot at the end zone and you didn't have any safety help. How did you have man coverage? You know, that was something that, look, when Tony Dungy, a Hall of Fame head coach, a former defensive coordinator, and a former defensive back in the NFL is tweeting about that's the worst coverage call that he's seen a coach make, that carries a lot of weight. And you knew when Matt LaFleur was asked about it after the game, and he said this.
Hey, Matt, on that final touchdown at the end of the half, was that man or cover three? And what happened there from what you saw?
Yeah, it was man coverage. Definitely not the right call for the situation. And you can't do stuff like that against a good football team and expect to win. So, I mean, really, when you look at it, there was 120 some odd plays both on both sides of the ball, plus all the special teams. There was a lot of plays in that game that could have been made that could change the outcome of the game. But the ones that really hurt us the most were that play and then to come out the start of the second half, had the fumble and they score to make it 28-10. I mean, that really was a big difference in the football game. You just can't do that stuff. And I blame us as coaches, for putting our guys in that situation. That's inexcusable. That should not have happened. So we gotta take a look at it and do some self-reflection and try to figure out ways how that can't happen again.
So you have a new defensive coordinator coming in. You make the decision to fire Sean Menega. Statistically, the Packers were the worst this season in the NFL in punt returns and in kick return coverage. You can't let that go. Statistically, with advanced metrics, it showed that the Packers were the fourth worst team overall when you factor in all aspects of special teams. If you're going to be a Super Bowl contender, and I believe that going into the 2021 season, the Packers will be a Super Bowl contender, you can't have that. So they fire Sean Menega, and I think that was the right move. Now Maurice Drayton, who was passed over for this job 2 years ago, he's been the assistant special teams coordinator. Now he's been promoted to become the special teams coordinator, and he's going to run that department. You expect some significant improvement, and the Packers will need to have significant improvement in special teams moving forward in 2021. But again, on defense, you just have to be more aggressive. So not necessarily surprising either one of those changes. We were just kind of waiting for them to be made official. And finally, the Packers do what we call in the news business, they do a Friday afternoon news dump. The official word, even though we knew earlier on Friday, The official word came down at about 4:15 on Friday afternoon. So, yeah, that's what we call a news dump, to just get bad news out of the way so nobody really has to spend that much air during the week talking about it. But, again, I don't think that any Packers fans are really going to have any quibbles with any of those moves. All right, the other breaking news story came from the world of baseball. This impacts the Brewers because the St. Louis Cardinals are getting probably the best third baseman in baseball, or certainly one of the best third basemen in baseball over the last decade, in Nolan Arenado from the Colorado Rockies. This according to Jeff Passan, his reporting for ESPN. Because the trade involves a significant amount of money, the Rockies are expected to send about $50 million to cover a portion of the 6 years and $199 million remaining on Arenado's contract, as well as Arenado waiving his no-trade clause and deferring money, so the deal is not yet completely official. The remaining hurdles are expected to be merely procedural, and with Major League Baseball, the MLB Players Association, and Arenado's approval, the long talked about trade would become a reality. Yeah, that's not good news for the Brewers by any means. I think this is going to be a difficult year for the Brewers. The pandemic disproportionately hurt small market baseball teams. And when you wipe out more than half the season, remember, the 2020 baseball season was only 60 regular season games plus an extended postseason, but 60 regular season games. So that was a significant hit of revenue that teams could bring in from their television partners. Obviously, with no fans in the stands, as the first major league sport to start their season, there weren't any fans in the stands until the playoffs in baseball this year, and there weren't any fans at Miller Park at all this year. Now American Family Field. I think the Brewers are going to struggle in 2021. They're going to struggle to find major league caliber players. They're going to struggle to do something beyond just having Christian Yelich try to carry this team on his back. They're dangling Josh Hader out there again, and I believe in the direction of the team. I believe in David Stearns. I believe in Matt Arnold. I believe in Craig Counsell. But there's only so much that these guys can do. You still have to have major league quality players to have a contending chance. And I'm not sure that the Brewers are going to have that. There's still a lot of holes on this team. There's a hole at first base. There's a hole at third base. It'll be nice to have Lorenzo Cain back. That'll be great. I think the outfield is going to be fine in 2021. But beyond that, there's just so many question marks about this team, and I don't want to predict doom and gloom, but if the Brewers are over 500 in the 2021 season, remember, they weren't over 500. They were a game under 500, actually two games under 500, 29 and 31 last season. They still made it to the playoffs because they took twice as many teams last year to the postseason as they had before to make up for the fact that it was a shortened season. So they were a sub 500 team last year. If they're over 500 in 2021, I think that's a miracle. So I don't look at the Cardinals getting Nolan Arenado as a big blow to the Brewers, because I think they're going to struggle this year. I think the Pirates are going to struggle. I think the Reds are going to struggle. The Cubs are even cutting payroll. I mean, they're one of the haves, if you will. The Cardinals aren't cutting payroll, obviously. They're bringing in maybe the best third baseman over the last decade in all of Major League Baseball, and it's putting them in a great position to win the division, and they very well might. They're probably going to be favored when the season does roll around. If the Brewers can stay around 500, yeah, I'm going to look at that as a success. And again, that's not a reflection on anything other than the economic climate that professional sports is kind of operating under right now. All right, so those two items I wanted to get out of the way as we begin the show. But what I want to spend a little bit more time on is something that we haven't really talked much about on the show, and that's the Milwaukee Bucks. The Bucks lost to the New Orleans Pelicans on Friday night, 131-126. Now, this was a game that got out of hand early for the Bucks, and they were down by almost 30 points at halftime, and then they clawed their way back into it. The Bucks outscoring New Orleans 44-35 in the third quarter, and then 37-28 in the fourth quarter. And they made it respectable. They made it a game at one point with about 5 seconds left before the Bucks had to foul. It was a three-point game. But the Pelicans were clearly in command of this one, and it happened because they were on fire from beyond the arc. And this is becoming and has been a really disturbing trend for the Bucks this season. We know that they're selling out the three-point line to defend the rim. But when you've got other teams that are red hot from the outside, it becomes target practice for them. The Pelicans, they shot 21 of 48 from beyond the arc. That's 43.8% from the three-point line. Former Buck Eric Bledsoe made half of his. Eric Bledsoe was 7 of 14. Lonzo Ball was 7 of 13 from beyond the arc. The Bucks can't have that if they're going to be a true contending team. And then you look at what happened in their win against the Raptors, not in Toronto, but in Tampa, because of COVID restrictions. That's what the Raptors are playing this year. You look at the Raptors, and they shot 40% from beyond the arc, 22 of 55. So you've got the Raptors shooting 55 three-pointers. You've got the Pelicans shooting 48 three-pointers. That's how you're going to lose. And if you look at the standings right now, it's not like the Bucks are doing what they were doing last season. Now, they're only two games back of Philadelphia. That's the good news. The Bucks right now, 11-7. They're in third place in the Eastern Conference. They were running away with the Eastern Conference a year ago. Philadelphia has the best record at 14-6, followed by Brooklyn. They're 13-8. Then it's the Bucks, then the Celtics, Pacers, and Hawks. Those are the top six teams in the Eastern Conference. You look at the West, though. I mean, the Lakers are 14-6. So this is going to be a topsy-turvy season, I think, in the NBA. But one of the things that we really have learned over the last couple of seasons, specifically, if you're a Bucks fan, and if you're listening to this, I suspect that you probably are a Bucks fan, that there's one thing that we've seen is that it doesn't matter what you do in the regular season because you have to now do it in the postseason. And that's something the Bucks just haven't been able to do. 2 years ago, of course, bounced. They win the first two games against Toronto, and everybody's making plans for the NBA Finals. Oh, this is going to be a cakewalk. They're just going to waltz right in to the NBA Finals. Taking on the Golden State Warriors? Okay. Man, looking up flights to San Francisco? No, it didn't happen because the Toronto Raptors, led by Kawhi Leonard, now obviously on the Clippers, then they swept the Bucks four straight games, swept them right out of the playoffs. Last season, the Bucks didn't even get that far. They were disjointed in the bubble and never really got it together. And credit to Miami Heat. I mean, they had an improbable run to the NBA Finals. They lost, obviously, to the Lakers. But it doesn't matter what you did in the regular season. So if that means that you're sandbagging a little bit or you're holding a little bit back in the regular season but still getting one of the top four seeds in either conference, I think that sets you up for a deep playoff run if you can flip that switch. Can the Bucks flip that switch? I haven't seen any evidence of that. Certainly over the last 2 years, we haven't seen any evidence of that, but there have been teams that have. LeBron James's teams over the course of his career, they have been famous for doing that. I mean, there was almost a mutiny on the hands of Eric Spoelstra when LeBron and the other two of the big three, Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, when they first all got together. And what did they do? They went to the NBA Finals 4 years in a row, winning two of them. But if you look at the Lakers right now, they were picked to be the team to beat, not only in the West, but in the NBA as a whole. And they're 14-6 right now. And you see stories about, well, now they're starting to circle the wagons and trying to figure out what's wrong with their team right now. And they're looking within themselves. Shut up. It's 14-6. They're one game back of Utah and one game back in some percentage points of their staple center mates, the Clippers. Lakers are fine. The Bucks, I think, will be fine. They're learning a new system, a new offense under Mike Budenholzer. But they have to defend that three better. After the game on Friday night, Mike Budenholzer met the media via a Zoom call. And, you know, they dived into a lot of the themes that I'm talking about right now, specifically defending the three. Here's Mike Budenholzer after the game on Friday night.
Before we get to any specific questions, I was just wondering your overall observations after this one.
I think first, New Orleans played great. Give them a lot of credit. Individually, they had guys that played really well. As a team, they played well. They were the aggressive team in the first half. And we were in a big hole because of how aggressive they were, how well they played. And we need to play better on both ends of the court. And the second half, I thought we did that. We competed. The guys kept fighting. The competitiveness that you need in this league was there in the second half. And so, you know, I think we need to be better for more than 48 minutes, but a lot of credit to New Orleans. You know, Stan Van Gundy does a great job with those guys, and they played well tonight. We had a big hole we had to dig out of for a reason. They were good.
And I know you're not one to reveal, like, conversations that you have with players, but I noticed in the third quarter you kind of were coaching up Giannis. How do you think he responded to whatever conversation you had, or even your coaching throughout the game? He had 17 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, Giannis was great. I don't think it has anything to do with me or coaching, but I'm just grateful to have such a player that wants to be coached and wants to win and has that competitive drive. You know, he was really good.
Eric Name.
What do you think kind of caused the difference in effort in the second half versus the first half, or maybe why the team came out flat in the first half?
You know, again, I want to be clear that I think, you know, New Orleans was really good in the first half. They played their, you know, like an A game or whatever you want to call it, and we were not very good. Part of it might have been flatness. Just they were the more aggressive team, and we didn't match it. But I think a lot of it was them. You know, we didn't screen well enough. We didn't drive it well enough on the offensive boards. You know, they were a problem for them on their offensive boards. So they played well. We didn't play well in the first half, and it happens.
Both Lonzo Ball and Eric Bledsoe had great nights kind of from the three-point line. They got going early. Do you think you guys, with the way that you defend the three, made it difficult enough on them to start? And do you think sometimes when it is easy for them to start, they can shoot above a higher level than they might normally?
Yeah, I mean, I do want to, you know, look at the film and see, you know, when and how they got their threes, particularly the early ones you talked about. But, you know, I don't think, you know, it was the plan, or there was, you know, anything strategically. Certainly Zion creates a lot of attention. Brandon Ingram creates a lot of attention. We want to be active. Those guys, you know, found them and they stepped in and made some good rhythm threes, some good shots. They were confident early. Bled hit his first floater early. You know, and then Lonzo had a couple too, in the second half, particularly, you know, kind of late kicks to the corner, or loose balls to the corner. And he hit a couple there. You know, Josh Hart's threes in the first half, I thought, hurt us too. So, you know, we'll look at the film, but, you know, they shot it well. That's a big part of when we say that they played well, give them credit.
Teams shooting well. I think teams are shooting 38.6% from three against you guys. That's top five in the league. What do you think kind of contributes to that, to having teams shoot well?
Yeah, I mean, there's a part where at some point, you know, we don't want to be – we got to be better on the three-point line, maybe more attached. The second half, I thought we were a lot better, maybe more connected. You know, so I think teams know that they got to come in and shoot a lot of threes, and they let it fly. And, you know, the results for them, I guess, have been good, like you just said.
Jim Ozarski.
Mike, generally speaking, do you kind of just go with a gut, or what are you looking for, I guess, when you make that decision or feel like your guys can make a run late in the second half or second half to stop a deficit, as opposed to playing the minutes game and that kind of thing?
Yeah. Tonight was like really right on the edge of where, you know, you got to make some tough decisions, whether you're going to play guys extended minutes and try and make a run. It felt like a game that we could maybe come back and, you know, flip it all the way from, you know, whatever we were down. I don't know if it, you know, the high 20s or got to 30, I'm not sure, but it just felt like a game that could flip, that we could win. And just wanted to give the guys a chance to do that. And I think it's good for us to play down, to play from behind a little bit, to get that experience. You know, but it was certainly, you know, I'm sure it's the reason for the question. It was close and not easy to decide to extend those guys, but we went with it.
You know, this actually reminds me a little bit of all the way back in the opener against Boston, when you said, look, the starter, you know, we were down, I think, 17 in Boston, and they should try to get back from it. And that's happened a little bit in the losses where it's been a double-digit deficit, maybe not as much as 29. I don't know. I'm imagining at some point you don't want to have to come back from 17 down in a quarter. What are you maybe seeing, or what would you like to see that that would either prevent it or at least get you guys over that hump that, that maybe you haven't been yet as you've let them play it out?
Well, you know, I think, you know, each game's got its own kind of story. And tonight it was just such a big deficit to overcome. But I thought we did a lot of things in the second half that, that gave us a chance. You know, I think it's probably just more, you know, tonight we can't get down that much. And there's always a couple plays, you know, that can flip it, that can maybe change. But I'm just, you know, it's frustrating to lose. It's frustrating to be down as much as we were. But at the same time, the pride, the competitiveness, the effort to come back is a real positive.
Bucks coach Mike Budenholzer after the Bucks, his team lost to the New Orleans Pelicans 131-126. But again, it goes back to defending the three. And right now, when it comes to defending the three, the Bucks are the fifth worst team in the NBA statistically. Sacramento's the worst, Indiana, Cleveland, Detroit, and then Milwaukee. It's the one thing that will make the Bucks a team that can contend, because they have the offense and they have the inside defense. The interior defense maybe is the best in the NBA, but that perimeter defense has been plaguing this team since Scott Skiles was the coach. You have to defend the three better. I mean, the teams that are successful generally do. The Lakers right now are third in the NBA. So I look for a rebound for the Bucks at some point. I think Giannis is going to be fine. His numbers are a little bit off from what they were the last couple of seasons. But I've got news for Bucks fans or NBA fans or anybody who thinks that Giannis is going to win back-to-back-to-back MVP awards. It's not going to happen. There's no way that Giannis is going to win three MVP awards in a row, because Michael Jordan should have probably won 9 in a row. 10 in a row, you know, with, you know, breakups, you know, for the two seasons that he did not play a full year. They sat out one full year and most of the next. So beyond that, he should have won when the Bulls won their three NBA championships. He should have won all three of those. And then when they came back and won the other three, Michael Jordan was clearly the best player in the NBA. But voters get sick of voting for the same guy. That's just the way it is. And especially 3 years in a row. And especially considering that last year and the year prior, the Bucks didn't get as far as a lot of the voters felt that they should in a weakened Eastern Conference. The Eastern Conference is not weakened anymore, especially when you've got James Harden on the Brooklyn Nets, especially when you've got the Philadelphia 76ers playing like the Philadelphia 76ers right now. They seem to finally be playing, you know, as one, as a team. And maybe they just needed a coaching change for that to happen. I still think that the Toronto Raptors, who have been really struggling this year, struggling with everything this year, they're going to find their way. But right now, if I'm a Raptors fan, that's the team that should be panicking. Or if you're the Miami Heat, you're the defending conference champions, for crying out loud, and you're 6 games under 500. My point is, it's early, and some of the usual suspects beyond just the Bucks are really, truly struggling, namely the Raptors and the Heat in the East. Oklahoma City, they're struggling. Dallas is struggling. Houston is struggling. Houston's a sub-500 team. Golden State, I mean, they're a 500 team right now. I know that they were the worst team in the NBA last season, but there's a long ways to go. And oftentimes, the top team in the conference, record-wise, that doesn't necessarily mean anything if you can't sustain that, if you can't keep that going during the 2.5 months that the playoffs go on in the NBA. All right, that'll do it for the weekend edition. It's a shortened version of the show. We've got a lot to get to on Monday's show as well. Hope everybody has a great weekend. Maybe you're listening to this as you're plowing out your driveway. Sometimes I do that. I like to listen to podcasts when I turn on the snowblower. So if that's what you're doing, send us a picture of what you're doing with your snow plow. And we will certainly get those up on our social media channels as well. Thank you for listening. Have a great weekend. And Bucks fans, just keep the faith, but defend the three. If you can't defend the three, nothing else is going to matter. And as we saw with the Packers, bad defense does sink you. That's why you always say that defense still wins championships. And I still do believe that, even in an era where it's offense, 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 or so it seems. You still have to defend. All right, have a great weekend. Plow safely, shovel safely, and we'll talk to you on Monday right here on the Doug Russell Podcast.